Welcome back to the Rock and Power Hour, a podcast where we talk to the most interesting people in the world of pop culture and everything in between. This week on the show, when it comes to legends, well, there's none greater in the stoner rock world than this gentleman. We are welcoming John Garcia this week on the Rock and Power Hour. Welcome back to the show. My name is Jason Rockman, and this is the Rockman Power Hour. First, right out of the gate, we want to thank you for being here. And please like, subscribe, and do all that great fun stuff. Tell your friends about the podcast. We've just celebrated 100 episodes, and we could not do that without all of you. So we really appreciate all the support and continue to spread the word because it's really, really helping. It's working. And we're excited about it. Let's bring in my co-host, Ryan Stick. Looking snazzy as ever, Mr. Ryan Stick. How are you, buddy?
I'm good, man. But you know, like when you said, hey, we couldn't have done it without you. It's like, no, we could. Yeah. We just feel like shit if we did 100 episodes and it wasn't for all you guys.
No, we'd
feel terrible about it. I'm a natural entertainer. I'm a ham. Like I was a shy kid. So if I wasn't holding onto my mom's leg, I was like on a stage trying to dance, even if I couldn't. Were you like that as a kid? Were you like an entertainer?
The oldest memory I have of being on stage was at Willingdon Elementary School. Okay. I think I was 6 or 7 and I got up on stage. My mom has a picture of it. I got up on stage in front of the gymnasium, packed gymnasium for a talent show. I had to be grade 3 or 4. And I had a blue collared shirt. It was the '70s. So I had like a blue collared, big collared shirt with a suede brown leather vest with long tassels. And I got up and I sang, "Do You Want to Know a Secret" by the Beatles.
You know, when you said tassels, I'm like, dude, the only people that wear tassels are strippers and cowboys. Wow. And sometimes both at once. Or small children in NDG in the '70s. That's really cute. Do you want to know a secret? Beatles. Yeah. Oh man.
I remember. And it's funny because every once in a while, I would go back to Willingdon and I would see my old gym teacher, Mr. Dalton. And he would always remember that even like later in life. I think I went back. You came with me once when we went back to talk about Comic-Con and we spoke.
Yes.
Remember? We were with
this minute. And it's kind of funny because I had no memory of it until you said that. Then all of a sudden, like the butterfly effect, there was this crazy montage in my head and Ashton Kutcher was there and it was crazy. But yes, I do remember that now.
I don't remember all that. I remember going to the school and then I remember going to Snowden Deli after with you and Priya. But anyways, Mr. Dalton, I believe he was there that time or maybe a time before that. And he always talks about me being on stage singing, "Do You Want to Know a Secret" when I was 6 or 7. So yes, you're going back to entertaining. And, I guess sometimes this is what you're meant to do. So it was never a doubt in my mind that I wanted to at least communicate, maybe not entertain, but at least try to communicate. So there you go. We're communicating.
I had those fantasies where I'd play a drum solo in front of the whole school and then they'd think I'm cool.
So
neither has happened, but we've had a Corey Taylor on our show. So that's pretty cool. So that good enough. And he has 3 drummers. Anyway, you're saying,
have you ever, do you ever have dreams? So I have this reoccurring dream. I've had it over the years of me jumping on stage and having to play bass and being thrust in front of like a slammed arena, full. And the last time I had this dream, I was filling in for Geezer Butler in Black Sabbath. And if you know Geezer, he's one of the best bass players. He's like it's always like some badass bass player that can't make it last minute. And I have to go up and I'm like, I can do it. And I wake up.
Okay.
Like, terrifying. It's terrifying.
I've had a lot of dreams where, like if it's musical, it means I'm unprepared. It's never a dream where I'm kicking fucking ass. No.
It's a dream where I'm dropped.
And people lift me up and like, you know, victorious, like chanting. It's more along the lines of heckling and so maybe that's why in life, like we like being prepared. Like you get pissed if you're, and so do I, if we're in a situation where we're made to look like idiots because we didn't have that Batman prep time, you know? And it's, and it's not like we need it all the time. Like, you're a professional, like, you know, I've seen you literally do an interview where you couldn't, you had a cold, you were sleep deprived, and still it's just like, camera went on, perfect interview, camera goes off, you crumble like a mess.
Yeah.
And that's what it's like being professional. But I mean, you know, if you could have had a little bit of preparation, but you didn't get that strictly because someone just didn't feel like telling you, then that's pisses you off, right? Like,
yeah, I think when you've done something long enough, you pretty much know what you have to do. But yeah, I don't like, it's not that I don't like being unprepared. I don't like, well, first of all, I hate waiting for people. You know that. I mean, we've gone to a couple of situations. We've been in a couple of situations together where we've waited on someone and I've just been like, I'm out. And you're like, what? Mm. I'm like, no, I'm not waiting. Fuck them. Cause I don't like to make people wait. So why would I wait for anybody? So I hate having my time wasted because everyone's time's precious. And as you get older, the last thing you want to do is be, you know, stuck like waiting for someone, realizing the time of your, you know, your lifetime is ticking away. And as you get older, that time is more and more valuable. So for me, I hate waiting for people. So when it comes to being unprepared, it's more the arriving somewhere and not having enough time to do what we have to do properly. And then someone not showing up and just all of that. Like, I like avoiding all that, you know? So getting there early, being set up a little bit early, like just being ready to go when we need to be ready to go. I always try to do that.
I hate setting up in front of people, man. Like, because I just feel like, even if I'm setting up a tripod or whatever, I'm like, whatever I'm doing, I just feel like I'm not supposed to have an audience. And they're all probably wondering what the hell is taking so long. And that gets in the way of actually setting it up properly. And you know, and I like when there's some boo-boo room too, where it's like, hey, you forgot the battery. Hey, you did this. Hey, you did that. And life happens. But, you know, with enough prep time, with enough Batman prep time, all of a sudden, you know, you might just have a piece of kryptonite in your pocket and, you know.
Everything works out. And that's what I've realized is like, there's no point in freaking out. That's actually going to make the situation worse. If you start losing your shit when you've got to do something, it just makes everybody else feel uncomfortable. But why do we get on this tangent anyways?
Because this is the Rockman Power Hour and we made a big stink about, well, not a big stink, but, you know, I've been your editor for years, whether you were doing interviews for other people, and half the time when it was for other people, there was kind of a note saying, cut it down, you know, make it condensed. But when it's the Rockman Power Hour, this is your namesake podcast. And if we want to talk about fucking up while filling in for Black Sabbath and our dreams while Freddy Krueger sits there in the audience giving us the finger and laughing, we fucking can.
That's true. We can do whatever we want. Well, anyways, yes. So it's great to be with someone who's prepared. It's great to be here joined by this gentleman this week, because Ryan, I am a huge, huge fan of Stoner Rock. I'm huge.
I thought you were talking about me.
Oh yeah,
John Garcia. Yeah, no,
you too. It's always great to be here. Listen, I'm always excited when I get to talk to someone who really shaped me musically, and it doesn't happen often, but when it does, it's extra special. And this was one of those interviews that was extra special. I did this interview, I believe I did it on a Sunday morning. I think it was pretty early in the day.
It was an early Sunday morning. Yeah.
I know I did it somewhat early and I was really excited to do it because for me, getting a chance to talk to John Garcia was like, I'm there. You just tell me when to be there and I will be ready. And that's exactly what happened. The reason why we're chatting with him is because he has a tour that is kicked off and he will be playing in Montreal on May 25th at Club Soda. He's going to be playing all of his stuff from his solo career. He's going to be playing Kaya songs. He's going to be playing a ton more. And we need to say this, Ryan, we got an exclusive scoop on this podcast. If you're a fan of John Garcia, if you're a fan of Stoner Rock, if you're a fan of his band Karma to Burn, and if you're a fan of Mastodon, you need to watch this interview because there is something in here that you've never heard before that'll knock your socks off. So Ryan, without any further ado, let's thank everybody that's involved with this podcast because they make us look good, sound good, and everything tastes better in our life because of them. So first off, Heartbeat Hot Sauce, the heartbeat of the Rockman Power Hour. Thank you for always being with us on this journey. Decided to bring this right out of the fridge because I wanted to show the realistic side of Heartbeat Hot Sauce. And this is as real as it gets. Poirier's Louisiana style KO edition. This has ghost pepper in it. Do not put this on everything as you would lather on dill pickle habanero because you will die.
Well, actually, do not pull a Conan O'Brien and lick it off of a wing.
don't. But it's very, very good. And literally, I just took this out of the fridge. You can see like the dew on it because I wanted to show that we do use this stuff. It's not just a prop. We use this every single goddamn day in our house. And I love Heartbeat Hot Sauce. So use our promo code ROCKMAN20 and get 20% off your entire order anytime you like. That code never expires. So make sure you use ROCKMAN20 when you check out. And they just posted that in the month of May, they will be set up at a couple of Costcos in the Montreal area.
No way.
Very excited for them. So big things happening for Heartbeat. And of course, you can get great merch there. I decided to sport my Camp Heartbeat shirt, which goes with their camp sauce, which is phenomenal.
Okay, you have so many Heartbeat Hot Sauce clothes that I don't have.
We got to get you some.
I don't usually put jelly in my hot sauce, but I'm feeling pretty jelly right now.
We'll get you sorted out. And speaking of jelly, if you want to be very, very envied by everyone in your neighborhood, make sure you check out Studio House Design, some of the best t-shirts in the world of pop culture, in the world of movies, in the world of anything pop culture driven. These guys do a great job on everything they do. They just put out their Hackers line a little while back. They did an entire David Lynch run with some Twin Peaks stuff in there too. So absolutely love Studio House Design. So go check them out as well. And a thanks to our friends at Audio Technica Canada.
Yes, Audio Technica Canada, making us sound good, but also giving us these cool mic arms, these amazing headphones. It's a pretty sweet setup. I love doing the show. I love how it sounds. I love just recording it. It's just if you're a podcaster and you're just starting out and you want to be, well, even if you're a seasoned pro, you're going to want to have a microphone that sounds this good and headphones that feel this good. And
yeah,
the works. I got to sneeze. No, keep going. I'm just stating that, like, you know, if everyone wonders, like, Ryan, why does it sound like your nose is blocked? I'm like, well, it's because it's been for weeks.
So why don't we give you a chance to sneeze? Why don't we give you a chance to blow your nose? And right now we're going to bring in our friend John Garcia right here on the Rockman Power Hour. All right. Very, very happy to have on the show this week with us a man whose career I followed for a long, long time. It's my first time really chatting with him. I met him as a fan way back when in 1999 at the Troubadour after a show with one of his numerous projects. And he's someone whose voice has been in my life for as long as I can remember. And I'm very, very happy to have on the podcast this week, Mr. John Garcia. Thank you for accepting on this Sunday afternoon.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you. I'm a little tired. It's the weekend, and I, you know, weekends for me are precious mental reality, if you know what I mean.
100%.
Yeah. So, but yeah, absolutely. And thank you, man. I appreciate you having me and stoked. So appreciate it.
Yeah, man. Well, listen, you and I have a friend in common, Bill Kelleher from Mastodon. Bill and I have been, he's one of my best friends. We've been friends for probably a good 12, 13 years now. And I got a call from him maybe about a year and a half ago. And he said to me, he goes, "Hey man, I'm going to be working on this really rad project with a singer I think you like." And he told me that it was you. And I was like, "What the fuck? You're working with John Garcia?" So, I was lucky enough to kind of hear what was going on in this project over the last year and a bit. And when I was in Atlanta at his house, he played me some of this stuff. So, it just got me thinking, man, what has John been doing lately? Because I know, you know, I know you always kind of are moving when it comes to music. There's always different stuff you're doing, but it just got me to say, man, I've been doing this show for 2 years now. I've got to try to get John on the podcast. And then the date popped up for Montreal. And then I reached out to Bill and I'm like, "Would you mind maybe trying to get us in touch?" And I get a text message a couple of weeks ago and you're like, "Hey man, Bill gave me your number. If you want to come to the show in Montreal, come on down." And then I asked you and you accepted. So first off, thank you for being here. I have a lot of questions for you, and I know it's Sunday, and I know you got things going on, but I do have questions for you that are going to run from the beginning to the end. But I just have to say, fans of your voice, when they hear some of this new music, they're going to be blown away, because I got to hear probably four songs, and I was like, dude, this guy's voice never gets, I mean, your voice gets better as you get older.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And, you know, I've come to, I know my voice better.
Right.
I know how to control it better. finding my voice was the toughest part of my journey. And, I still genuinely do, enjoy, love to sing.
Yeah.
It's a little bit harder for me these days, but I have more control. It's, you know, at 53, I'm still very much young at heart. And, I still love to sing. This project with Bill, I have really no words, with the exception of, you know, I'm just super stoked to be involved with Bill, Rich, and Nathan from Karma to Burn. And, you know, Rich and Nathan and I, we go way, way back.
Right.
So when Rich said that he was going to be involved with the project with Bill from Macedon, I was like, you know, where do I sign? You know,
yeah.
Bill, I have to tell you, that dude is, he's a badass.
Yeah.
I have a mad amount of respect for Bill, and his family, and his work ethic. He's just a professional, and he's just a great guy.
Yeah.
He's a family man, which I like. I'm a family guy. I'm all about family.
Yeah.
And my son, my daughter, my wife, all of my animals that I have here in the California desert. So I'm super stoked to be involved with a project with him and Rich and Nathan. Something that was completely and totally unexpected. And the songs I thought were really great, and I said, you know, fuck it, I've got to be involved in this. But working with Bill and his team of engineers, I call them the wizards.
Yeah,
they're great, again, he's just a family man, a good person, a professional, and that's really. That's how this project came about, because he has his shit together. He knows what the fuck he's doing.
Yeah.
He's a great songwriter. He's a great guitar player. And again, I have nothing but mad respect for Bill. This project is hopefully one of these days it'll see the light of day, and we'll see how it all plays out. But we're just taking this step by step and kind of day by day and seeing how it all plays out. But yeah, we're going to be moving and grooving and hopefully rocking and rolling. And we'll see how it all plays out.
Well, this is the thing. So I people should know that if you're listening to this and you've tuned in, this is something that is not coming to the world just yet. And I do feel like a bit of an asshole, because I have heard it and it's good. So, but I'm letting people know it is, have patience, because when this does come, you're going to love it.
And you're really the first, this is really the first outlet that it's kind of been kept under wraps.
I know. And that's why I was kind of hesitant. Like right before we came on, I was like, can we talk about this? And you were like, yeah, let's do it. But
right before this conversation, he's like, hey dude, you can talk about it if you want. I'm like, dude, I'd love to talk about it. There's, you know, I wanted to kind of keep it in my back pocket, but you know, that's the music, you know, the music will, when it's time, it'll be time.
Yeah.
And moons have to align just right to have this come out, and we'll just see how it all plays out. And again, it's just, you know, four dudes getting in the studio and jamming out and making some good music and doing it at a professional level. Yeah. And being Cool and cordial about the whole fucking thing and just being professional about it. And that's all it is. And that's the same with my life in general, and being a father and a husband to my wonderful wife Wendy and my daughter Madison and my son Marshall. That's what it's all about for me. I'm very appreciative, very, very appreciative to be talking to you about this. I don't take it for granted, and something that, it's special to have me be on your show and to talk about projects like this and my past projects and my tour, which I'm getting ready to go on, and coming up to Montreal. It's like the amount of appreciation and thankfulness that I have for something of what I'm about to embark on, because I haven't done it in the United States in a tour like this since Vistachino in well over a decade. It's a big deal to leave Palm Springs Animal Hospital, the hospital that I help run, the hospital that my wife Wendy helps run with me, along with, Dr. Hennen, Dr. Chang, Dr. Rambod. I'm there for them. I'm here. I'm there to help. I'm there to help people, and I'm here to help help pets that need help. That's why I'm here. I'm here to take my son to weight room tomorrow morning at I have to leave at 6 o'clock in the morning to drive all the way down to Palm Desert and then go to work. And it but it's the amount of appreciation that I have for something as simple as all the things that I just got done saying is off the charts, because everything can change so quickly. Everything in a drop of a hat. So I appreciate the fact that I have Eric Jarvis, that I have Yeri Stetter, that I have Alexis, my tour manager, my booking agents. And of course, all of this can't happen without my band, John Bennett, Billy Cordell, and Mr. Pecker, Greg Sines. So, there's a lot of people, there's a lot of moons and a lot of things that have to align to make sure something like this happens. And so the appreciation is really, really, I'm very thankful that I can have this conversation with you and have my barbecue going. And you saw me earlier, I was seasoning the carne asada. So, I enjoy life, and I appreciate the very, very, very little things, such as talking to you about stuff that to some people that they could care less, and that's fine.
Well,
That's okay. It is what it is. And I just when I'm done, I'm gonna put on, Adrian Quesada from the Black Pumas and listen to Jaguar sound and barbecue my carne asada and hang out with my family. And that's what I do. So, the appreciation for all the small things from spinning a record and barbecuing is really something that I do not take for granted.
well, and it's nice to see the gratitude that you have, because I can really relate to that. Being someone that was a musician for a long, long time, transitioned in careers, have two kids. I've got a almost 20-year-old. I've got an almost 17-year-old. I'm the same age as you, 53. I love my life right now. But I was that guy that toured a lot. But what I love for people like you are the ones that have done have done the professional musician thing for years, and come around the other side of it and say, you know what? It's great to be a professional musician, but it's also great to be something else and not afraid to take other roads. And I think it's nice when you can marry the two together and just be happy in one life, but still be able to go out there and kick ass. And I love that. So we're talking about live. Last time I saw you live was, I have it because I keep everything, was this show in Montreal, September 23rd, 2013. I got the set list too. So I remember being lucky enough to have seen you twice in 2 years. Saw you in 2011 when you first came through as Caius Lives, and then came through as Vistachino. It's been 11 years since I've seen you sing live. And then there's this show coming May 25th. There's been a lot of stuff in between. You've put out some solo records. There's a 7-inch that I ended up getting from somebody that played with Black Mastiff. Like I've got all this stuff from the past and you know, very recent. What is this new tour about? Like, what is it kind of a celebration of your career so far? Like, are people that are gonna be coming to the show gonna expect to hear stuff that runs the gamut?
Yeah, it's me. It's, and I've said this quite often. If a singer had a rule book in regards to how many bands or how many projects he played in, that rule book was thrown out with me a long time ago.
Yes.
I love my past. I love Caius. I love still love singing those Caius songs. I love Hermano. I love Slow Burn. Even Vistachino, and I'll be playing, you know, a celebration of my past, including some of my solo work as well. So yeah, it's a celebration of my past. It's me hanging out and with, you know, my guys, Billy and Greg and Johnny, Alexis and Elise, my crew, and it's about that camaraderie, about family, again celebrating my past. So you're gonna see a lot of stuff. There's again all of those bands in there: Caius, Hermano, Slow Burn, even Vistachino. I'm for the first time I'm throwing Vistachino in the mix. So it's great to be able to do that. And again, very, very lucky to be in this position where I'm in. And I hope that, you know, Johnny and myself, Johnny B, John Bennett, my guitar player, him and I we're passing things back and forth, and we're writing a new record along with Force Greg and Billy, and it's hard. It's hard when everybody has families,
yeah,
and everybody has careers. You know, John Bennett's a school teacher, you know, Billy, he owns a very successful yoga studio in Palm Desert. Greg, he's a jack of all trades and runs one of the most exclusive bars in Rancho Mirage, which is the playground of the presidents. And so all of us have families and jobs and there's some normality in our lives. So to be able to come back and have these guys support me and have these guys support my past and show these songs an incredible amount of respect, that's a big deal. That's a big deal to me. And they take it seriously. This is something that we're about to embark on this thing next month. I was just told Wendy when we were going up the hill to Yucca this morning, I said, you know, I'm leaving on tour next month. And we kind of both looked at each other and we're like, fuck, I haven't done in a long time. So it's a big deal for everybody, for all the wives and all the kids.
Yeah,
and
sure.
Especially, you know, the wives. I can't leave the wives out because their guys are gone.
Yeah,
you know, and they really allow us to do this stuff. Without the support of our families, our wives, especially our wives, this stuff can't happen. Because we're gone, and we can't do this for free. We can't do this because it's fun. We have to go out and we have to make a living at this stuff. We have to be able to support our families. I have to have enough steaks in the refrigerator to be able to blast off and go play these shows, to play High Noon in Madison, Wisconsin. That's like a big deal for me.
Yeah.
That place is a special place in my heart. My daughter, you know, lives near Madison, and I'm going to be seeing her out there, but we played the old High Noon Saloon in Madison, Wisconsin with the Dwarves.
Wow.
90s. And, it was an incredible show, an incredible time, what an incredible city. And, you know, so this is something that's sentimental for me as well. And something that I don't do very often, especially with a project like this. This is a big deal for everybody involved.
Well, that's what I was going to say. You know, what's kind of nice about you is that when you do embark on these things and you do it, people better go, because it's not, like you said, you've got a lot of things going on. So when you do allow the planets to, or when the planets do align and you are able to go out and do a run like this, fans should go, because it's special and it's not something that you see every day. Now, I find it really cool when I see younger kids discovering older music and discovering your old stuff and not realizing, you know, like when people start to look at the stoner rock tree, if you will, and all the different branches that have gone off in the trunk. And, you know, there's no doubt that you were very much at the forefront of that, you know. Is it strange when people come up to you and tell you, you know, and they start gushing and they say like, man, like you're like a legendary guy in this scene. And if it wasn't for you, there wouldn't be this. I mean, I still think that, you know, a band like Caius, really were ahead of their time, like way ahead of their time. And it's always those bands, those special bands that kind of come before, but kind of lay the groundwork for a lot of other people to kind of build on. Is it strange to be considered one of those musicians and one of those bands?
It is. Totally is. And I'm a normal guy.
Yeah. Well, that's what I mean. Like there's people that, you know, hold a lot of the stuff that you've done in very, very high regard. And it's got to be strange for you, as humble as you are, as I'm seeing now, what do you do when people come up to you and like, you know, they're like, can you sign this? And can you sign this? And can you sign this? And then they even have this. I mean, what do? Do you just kind of graciously go, thank you? Or is part of you just like, what the fuck?
Yeah, I'm appreciative. And I give credit where credit is due. And that's because of Josh.
Yeah.
That's because of Scott. That's because of Nick. That's because of Alfredo. It's because of these guys, you know, and I have mad respect for all of those guys. And I wish I wish them nothing but the best and the happiest of lives and all the success in the world. And it's because of them, you know, it's because of them that I'm here speaking to you. So I absolutely give credit where credit is due. We don't, as Brent would say, we don't go to the park and kick the ball around with all of our kids every weekend like some people think that we do, but it's because of all those guys. And I say this to Brent and Josh, were a big part of my musical career growing up, and I knew who the music kids were growing up in high school. I knew who, you know, you see the kids with the rock and roll t-shirts, the band t-shirts, and I'm a fan of music. I'm a fan of song. And, you know, when I went to Waterloo Records in Austin, Texas, when we played South by Southwest about a month ago, I cleaned out the Black Pumas section. I cleaned out the Adrian Quesada section. My wife cleaned out another section. I won't tell you what that band is because I'm not a big fan of that band. But anyway, it's great to be able to look back and say, these are the people that are making this happen for me today.
Yeah.
But I again, Dave Angstrom, Dandy Brown, Mike Callahan, Steve Earle, you know, all the guys from Armano and Slowburn, Chris Hale, Brady Erickson, Damon Garrison, you know, just all my guys, Mike and Arthur from UNITA.
Yeah.
Who I just saw the other night. We hung out and we had the greatest time. And they're out with another singer right now, who's incredible. But, you know, I love my guys.
Yeah.
All my, very proud of them. I'm very proud of my past. And I'm just very, very lucky to have been involved with such great musicians. And it's something that I don't take for granted. And I don't usually talk about it. Marshall doesn't know half the guys that I've played with, my son.
Yeah.
You know, and so the appreciation level again is off the charts, and I'm just lucky to have been involved with all of these guys, and I still like to reinvent myself in all these bands that I played in, Caius and Slowburn and UNITA and all the guest things that I've done, including Danko Jones.
Yeah, Danko, fellow Canadian.
Fuck, he just came out with something called 4x10, and it just I saw it on Instagram today, and I'm so proud of that guy. He wrote the song called 5,000 Miles, and he knows I'm a big family man as well. And but to play that song with him, you know, it just, again, the appreciation level is off the charts, and I don't take any of this stuff for granted.
Your favorite singer, if I'm not mistaken, is Ian Astbury from The Cult. Does that still ring true?
It still rings true. It does. Ian, and he just came out with something that I saw on social media today as well. So I'm curious about listening to it. But yeah, Ian's he's up here. He's
Have
yeah.
you had have you ever had a chance to shake his hand or to meet him?
I have. Yeah.
And how
Yeah,
was
I have.
that? What was that like for you? Because I mean, we've talked about people that'll come up to you and kind of gush. Was it a strange thing for you? Like, was there a little fanboy moment? That must have been.
Yeah, you know, I was shaking in my boots, you know. I wanted to be Ian Astbury. I did. I wanted to be him. And that was all part of finding who I was,
Right.
you know. In high school, that guy was like, he changed my life.
He was the
Yeah.
coolest. I mean, like, again, we're the same age. So when She Sells Sanctuary, I heard that on the radio. I was like, what is this? This is not
Yeah.
like at the time it was all big hair, cock rock. And then these guys come like, who the fuck is this? And
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
then they, then, you know, they put out Electric, and then they put out Ceremony, and it's like, this is like really good rock. And they were incredible. So I can imagine meeting Ian must have been like, wow.
Yeah. And what happened when I was in my photography class at Indio High School, and a guy by the name of Greg Grinville took his Walkman out and he goes, "Here, listen to this." And it was She Sells Sanctuary, changed my life. And Maggie Martin at Palm Desert High School, she handed me the new Cult record, and it was Electric. And I was like, the departure from Love, from Steve Brown to Rick Rubin, and that departure from Love to Electric, why this topic has not been brought up and just looked at through a microscope, and why isn't such a big deal is beyond me, because it's such a departure.
Huge, huge.
Huge. And but I don't know. I still like them. I still love them. I was like, what? How the fuck did you go from this, you know, from Love to Electric? How that departure was incredible. And they still had Jamie Stewart and Les Warner in the band, so all of them made such just a 360. But I knew I still loved them, and I followed them, and I still follow them, you know, just because I'm a fan. But to meet Ian, what you know, he's the reason why, you know, I still do this. You know, he's the reason why I still have, you know, a Shure SM58 right next to me. And rehearsal is not until Wednesday, but I keep it near the kitchen table because of Ian.
It's great. And it's fun when you can talk to someone who's been very influential about their influences, because at the end of the day, we all have a spark that happens. There's something that happens that goes off. Like for me, you know, it was really Faith No More that were the band that made me want to make music. When I first heard, I mean, it was Faith No More and Jane's Addiction, and I always talk about this magical time in music, and you'll get it. There was a time in like the very late 80s to the early 90s, right before grunge blew up. But there was this weird time in like the late 80s, early 90s, where there was really no rules in music at all. And it was almost like there was this huge shift that was going on. So you had bands like Faith No More, bands like Jane's Addiction, bands like Living Colour, bands that just were kind of true originals. And then they kind of laid the groundwork for, and for me, it was the most magical time in music. And what it really made me want to do as a musician was not have any rules, and, you know, be able to change from record to record. When you started writing music, and, you know, Caius had a sound, but Caius's sound, it did tend to shift from record to record a little bit. Not overly, because I mean, you were really a big part of the presentation of that band that people could relate to. I mean, the vocalist is always something that I think is the most relatable for anybody. For anybody, everybody has a voice that can make a sound, or the majority of people have voices. So I think a musician, or a singer, is very relatable. Like, it's something that's almost at the front that people can grab right away and go, oh, I like this. But the music can change in the back. And unless you're a guitar player or a drummer or a bass player, you'll understand that a little less than someone who could just understand, any pedestrian can understand a voice. When you got to actually writing music and putting stuff over sounds that you heard, was it important to you guys that you sounded different with each record? Or did you say that this is kind of a sound that we have and let's just build on that?
Yeah, you know, I think that I was still, as far as I'm concerned, and then you ask Brent and he'll tell you something, you ask Josh, he'll tell you something different. Nick, he'll probably tell you something different. I think that for me, it was just something that I wanted to do. I actually didn't care. I didn't care. I didn't care what anybody thought. I just wanted to show Josh's songs, Brent's songs, my songs, their lyrics, my lyrics, justice.
Yeah.
I just wanted to be there in that room. And I didn't care. I honestly didn't care whether we did a tour with Faith No More, whether we did a tour with Danzig or Metallica or Babes in Toyland or Dinosaur Jr., whatever it may be. I didn't care. And that was the really naive part of me. And I want to kind of go back and I say this. I want to kind of go back and kind of slap that kid around and say, dude, get your shit together. Appreciative of the people you're around, your surroundings. And listen, man, you're lucky. You're lucky to be here. And so I didn't care. All I knew was that I wanted to sing. I wanted to be in a band. And I was lucky. I was very, very, very lucky to be a part of that. Not too many singers are, you know, can say that they've been around such an eclectic group of guys, but Josh and Brent and Scott and Nick and Alfredo, those guys were incredible. And we were very lucky. And, you know, I was still finding myself. I was still, I was still a kid, you know, really. And I was a late bloomer, you know, when it comes down to some of the things that I now have more control over, you know. And, you know, speaking of Faith No More, Angel Dust, yeah. Going back and listening to that record, holy shit, what an incredible record that is. Yeah. That is by far one of my, that's got to be in my top 10.
You're talking about departures, you know, from Love to Electric. I remember having The Real Thing and loving that record because the hooks were there and Patton was like, it was just, you know, so many great hooks and so many great songs. And I was like, I love this band. And then Angel Dust came out. And I remember I was in Newbury Comics in Boston. I was dating a girl that lived in Boston. I went to go see her in Boston. I bought Angel Dust on CD at Newbury Comics and I put it in my Discman and I listened to it and I fucking hated it at the beginning. I was like, what is this? This is so fucking weird. Like, what are they doing? What is it? He's screaming and like, what? And then I listened to it again. And like you, one of my Desert Island Discs now, one of my favorite albums of all time. And I got a chance to talk to Matt Wallace and Billy Gould on this show at length about the 30th anniversary of Angel Dust and about making that record. Again, those guys didn't know what they were doing either, man. They just kind of went in and this is what happened. So I think a lot of times when guys like me ask you questions like that, in hindsight, it's very easy to say, well, we were this, 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 this. But in the moment, you're just trying to figure it out and take one step in front of the other. But it's the beautiful magic that happens when you put people in rooms together. And I think that's the crazy thing about being a musician. You create stuff that people are attached to, that people have sentimental value towards, that expect a certain thing out of it. And then the people in those rooms, they go in different directions and they grow and they change. And fans want some of these people 35 or 40 years later to be able to go back in and do this again. And it's like, nah, man, this is moments in time that happen. But it's crazy when you think of, there's always going to be those bands that are going to do this. And just when we think, as we get older, it's never going to be as good as we thought. You know, it was always better back in the old days. A new band will come and you'll be like, holy shit, who are these guys?
Yeah.
For you, what's, I mean, I think I know the answer, but what are some of the bad, what, yeah, I was going to say, so tell me about some of the stuff that 53-year-old John Garcia is listening to and getting his mind blown from.
Yeah, that's the Black Pumas.
Yeah.
You know,
So what is it about the Black Pumas? So I can tell, I mean, I can just, you know, I know you like the band. You mentioned that you support them. What is it about the Black Pumas?
nothing has moved me. Nothing has moved me the way the Cult has moved me, like the Black Pumas.
Now that's a huge compliment.
And that's big, because once I get into something, I go down the rabbit hole. And these two guys have created something that I can't explain. The older I get, I find myself going further and further back by listening to older music. And Adrian, what and how he compliments Eric is something that I've never heard, I've never experienced, I've never felt before. And you know, they're just they they're there's something about, as I think Adrian would say and has put it, the Latin shade of Texas soul,
Okay, yeah.
something like that. When you have the Latin shade of Texas soul, and you have this psychedelic R&B soul music, and it has nothing but feeling and emotion. And this motherfucker, pipe hitting hardcore fucking badass, Eric Burton, singing from the heart, and you know it's from the heart, you
Yeah.
know from the soul. It's undeniably, unequivocally just fucking heartfelt. It's hard not to like it.
Yeah.
Very, very hard not to like the Black Pumas. And there's so many songs, and there's so many shows and takes of Colors and October 33 and, you know, Chronicles of a Diamond and their debut record. And Capital Cuts and their 45s and Adrian Quesada and all of his reincarnations of himself, but all along keeping the heart. And it is undeniably hardcore pipe hitting North End Indio music when you're living next door to the Archuletas and they're playing music. This is what I'm hearing.
Nice.
The right next door, and I'm swimming with all my guys, you know, Billy Vella, Kelly and Marcos Diaz, David Grant, all of his brothers, and we're swimming in the back in our pool in North End Indio, and the Archuletas are barbecuing next door. This is the music that they would be playing,
Nice.
and I think it just brought me back to that childhood thing where no other band has made me feel this, with the exception of the Cult. But Adrian, he's a fucking badass. Jaguar Sound. If you don't have Jaguar Sound, I highly recommend you get this record. He's got a few other projects that he's a part of. Not a few other, a shit ton more. But he's just a badass. He was one of Prince's guitar players. And but he, when he hooked up with Eric and they did NPR Tiny Desk,
Yeah.
that series, oh my God, that's what got me. The
Well,
NPR Tiny
it's
incredible.
funny you say NPR Tiny Desk because I'm a big fan of that. And when you see somebody on there, you can't fake that. You either got it or you don't. And the people that I've seen on there that have blown me away, Run the Jewels, were really, really good. And I've seen a couple of people on there that have just been like, holy shit, like this is just NPR Tiny Desk is it's a level past just a live recording. It's like you got to be able to do it there. There's no faking it there. It's like it's like you're in the room with them. You know, when someone blows you away on NPR Tiny Desk, it's the real deal.
Yeah, agreed. And the band that Adrian put together, my God, Brandon Bond on bass. And then he has Lauren Cervantes is one of the singers. Angela Miller is one of the singers. What a band he put together. And Adrian himself as a guitar player, he's incredible. I had an opportunity to see him a couple years ago at the House of Blues in Las Vegas. And I DM'd him, and Adrian, he was like, dude, you got tickets? I'm like, yeah, I'm actually here to see you. And he's like, dude, let me hook you up. So he hooked Wendy and I up with a balcony spot, and we had our own bathroom, we had our own bartender, we had our own server, and he just rolled out the red carpet for us. And since then, we've texted back and forth a couple times, but I have mad respect for that guy. He's just an incredible producer and musician. His producing and his engineering, and he's fucking nuts when it comes down to his a studio in Austin, Texas. And I'm just a massive, massive big fan of Black Pumas and Chronicles of a Diamond. If you haven't got that one, that's a ripper. That's an incredible record. And I can't talk highly enough about them. I think my wife is about ready to strangle me if I play one more Black Pumas record around. Constantly on, it's just part of the background. And my son, he's a I've made him a Black Pumas fan, so he's a fan of Adrian and Eric's as well. And we're spreading the love, and it's all about spreading the love. I still like where music takes me, where the Black Pumas take me, where Adrian takes me. I love that journey, and it's all about the journey and enjoying where it takes you. If I've had a bad day at the animal hospital, and I've had four euthanasias in a row, that still tweaks me. I don't like doing that. I like helping animals. Sometimes you have to help them by putting them down. But if I've had a bad day and I put on Jaguar Sound or I put on Chronicles of a Diamond, it takes me someplace else. It takes me to in my pool as a kid, listening to music, what the Archuletas are playing right next door to me. That's where it takes me, and I still love where this music takes me. I'm sorry, I went on off
No,
on
it's
a
good. I
different.
mean, listen, like I think it's great when the way this stuff used to be before the internet, we had to have people that told us about bands that they loved. And that was what it was always word of mouth. It was that, it was that older brother or older sister or that cool guy that worked at the record store that was a little gatekeepery, but not too much. But if he liked you, he would say, hey, kid, forget about that. You want to listen to this. And that's the stuff that, I just wanted to ask you quickly because I know that you had a couple of things that were released on Man's Ruin, and Frank Kozik was a very, very important part of the he's a very, very important part of a certain scene and a certain sound. News of his passing was very, very sad. Were you still in touch with Frank, and how did you take that?
Yeah, n no. When I found out, it was like no way. I found out at work, and I was sitting in my pharmacy, and I found out, and I was like, "What the fuck?" But yeah, Frank was what an incredible human being. Him and Lydia, at Man's Ruin, they were an integral part of my life, and I'll always remember his artwork and the music that he put out, and him being just an incredible human being. What a nice guy. What a really, just a really cool guy. He was cool. Frank and Lydia were always super fucking cool. And they're a part of my life. And if anybody were to ever ask me about, Frank and Man's Ruin, that's a big part of the whole thing, man.
Yeah,
That's a
well, that's the, it's not talked about enough, but the people in the know realize, especially the collectors. I mean, the guys that, people like me who have a lot of that original shit.
Yeah.
It's important stuff, man, because it was like the show posters, like all that stuff is just it was part of the whole aesthetic and the whole like the whole movement was, it was really important. And I think it's the kind of thing that needs to be spoken about a little bit more because you know, here's one of the guys that brought show posters back to being cool again. They had kind of lost everything, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And listen, man, the type of shit that I have up in my loft.
I was going to ask you, you must have a ton of great shit up there.
Frank I used to go to his place in San Francisco, and he goes, how about it? Okay. I'm like, I'll take that. And I have them all.
So you
got
have,
them.
So, right? Okay. So you, this here, I have, I mean, I'm going to show it to you when I see you, but you have, obviously you have this, right?
Sure. Yeah.
I mean,
absolutely.
These things are whole, and they're so bootleg too. It's
orange and vinyl, the original. I've got them. I've got, I think I have 10 of each in my life.
Mine's
and
perfect.
yeah you know what, man, it was a really cool time back then, going to a studio up in San Francisco. What a really cool time that was. And that I appreciated. I was like, wow, because I'm a big fan of art. That's one thing that I am a fan of, is art. I love art. I'm working with right now with one of my Spanish artists, Elido and Gemma, and they just designed this tour poster that you're about to see, Tour of the Veladores, and that's going to be, I want it not only to be, it's going to be sold at our shows, but I'm going to put it on Elido's art on a women's t-shirt only, and it's only for women, that it's going to be put out per my wife.
Okay.
So something special, but I'm a big fan of art, and Frank was a big part of that, and bringing those tour posters back, that was incredible. Some of the stuff that he did, and you know, I have nothing but absolutely high praise. You know, just incredible artist, and he will be missed. There's no doubt in my mind.
You know, I could sit here and I could talk to you for hours, but I know you got some meat to grill. And I want to give you back to your family on this Sunday. But John, thanks for taking the time, man. I can't wait for people to see this tour. I'm so glad that you're embracing this. And I love where you're going to with this, because it seems like you're coming from a place where you're really, really cognizant of how lucky you are to be doing it and the respect that you have. Like when you mentioned things like, you know, we're leaving our wives behind. I mean, there's a respect there, not like, oh man, I can't wait to get out of there and get on the road with the guys. Like, it's nice. It's nice to see, because those cliches sometimes have been done to death, but it's nice to see someone who's probably very excited still to get on stage and play, but at the same time is like, hey, hey buddy. But at the same time, you're appreciative of everything you have around you that still allows you to do it. And I highly encourage people to come check you out in Montreal. You're playing at Club Soda, which is a great venue. You've got some great openers. You know, Telekinetic Yeti, I know, are a great band. And but I'm looking forward to seeing you rock, because it's been 11 years, and if you see some guy in the front screaming for some Yanita songs, it'll be me.
Cool, man. Thank you. You know, and I have to say, I don't do these, you know, these things very often, but it's nice when you have a journalist, a fellow musician, that gets it, that understands, you know, the craft. And when you have a journalist and a musician asking, you know, heartfelt, intelligent questions, you evoke some things out of people. And you certainly did that. So
thank you
very much. I really appreciate it. I'm a little bit on the tired side, so there's bags underneath my eyes. And but so anyway, to all of you and your listeners and your subscribers, I say thank you, and for the continued support. And if you do get a chance to come to Club Soda, get ready. That's all I got to say. Just get ready.
I love it. Thanks, John. We'll see you soon, man.
Cheers. Thank you so much.
What a nice, humble, awesome fellow. Jason, take me back in time. Well, like, when did you first hear Caius? When did you first become a fan of John Garcia?
Well, the first time I heard John Garcia's voice was in our tour van in the early 90s. There were two bands that Kevin was playing all the time. I'm talking about Kevin Jardine, a guitar player from Slaves on Dope, and an old friend, very old, dear old friend.
Very old.
No, yes.
Just kidding. Well,
we haven't been a long time. So yeah. Two records I remember hearing a lot in 94 are two bands, Caius and the first Korn album.
Okay. And
Kevin played these all the time in the van. And I remember just loving John Garcia's voice because it was so original. It really harkened back to a time when vocalists really had like a presence and had a sound, and he could just hit these notes. And it was just, I fell in love with his voice, and I followed him in everything that he did after Caius, with all of his multiple solo bands. And then when we moved to California, it was great because we were so close to, the California desert and all that desert rock scene where it all was birthed from, you know, the Joshua Tree and all that area. So when we were living in California and in Los Angeles, a lot of these stoner rock bands would come and play at the Troubadour and other little venues, some little venues in Silver Lake. So I got to see some really, really cool bands when I was there, when they were kind of like a guy like John Garcia. I got to see him. I believe he was with UNITA. And I got to see them play at the Troubadour and got to meet him. And it was really, really cool. If you can just throw this picture up, this is me and Kevin with UNITA. Check it out. It's hilarious. And I actually sent that photo to John Garcia after doing the interview. And he was like, wow. I just want to encourage everybody, if you are a fan of John Garcia, as you can hear in our interview, he does not do this all the time. This is a very special occasion that he is going out on tour. So make sure you catch him at one of these dates in the month of May and into June. It is going to be a phenomenal tour, May 25th at Club Soda. Don't miss it. It is going to be great. John Garcia and his band are going to be here. And I'm super excited. And Ryan, we got, you know, the scoop, man. Him and Bill have a project. And I've heard the songs. When I was at Bill's house, I got to hear a lot of the songs that John's working on with Bill. And it's just phenomenal. The world is not ready for this project because it's so, so good.
No, that's really cool that you got to hear them, you know, because Bill wanted you to hear them and not because he fell asleep and you're an asshole. Like, you know,
I didn't like grab his phone and like play them for me. And I was like, and I begged him, can I please have those? He's like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, I'm going to send those to you, but here, you can listen to them. So I got to hear four or five songs. And I tried to commit them to memory. That's how much I like them. And one of the choruses actually stood with me and I still remember it. So I'm not going to hum it though, because that would be bad. But so go see John Garcia and get ready for the new project that's going to be coming out hopefully in the end of the year, maybe 2025. But just great to see him back out there. And Ryan, I've got it. I've got all my vinyl here in my bag, ready to hopefully get signed at the show. That's how much of a fucking nerd I am.
That's amazing, man. I'm going through a vinyl phase myself right now. Like, you know, I know vinyl's always been you, and we've had many lengthy, detailed episodes regarding your love of vinyl and our people's love of vinyl. But you know what? There's so many interesting factors. What I love about vinyl is I love that, all the album art that I saw, like, you know, tiny on a CD or a tape. I can't imagine the dip that all of you guys felt while it was happening when they said they weren't going to make vinyl anymore, where you have the album art, like this huge 13, 14 inch album in front of you. Yeah. And when the version on a tape, that's like, what, maybe 3 inches tall.
Yeah. You know, it was really weird to go from vinyl to cassette and then go to CD. CD was a bit of a welcome change because at least with CD, you had crystal clear sound. I mean, it did sound incredible compared to cassette. Then vinyl has a charm to it, you know, and when you actually get to, listen to vinyl and you get to, you know, drop the needle and have that experience. It's like no other, you know, it really is a special experience. So, but man, dude, it's going to be a great show. I'm really, really excited about this. And I'm glad he's coming to Montreal. So go check it out. The good folks at Blue Skies Turn Black are bringing in John Garcia. You can get your tickets now. Just go to Blue Skies Turn Black and, go to Club Soda's website and get your tickets. Do not miss it. Saturday, May 25th is going to be a phenomenal show. We're looking forward to it. So thank you to John Garcia for being here. Thank you to our friend Bill for helping this happen, because we really helped to make this happen, because, you know, he did help make it happen. John Garcia, dude, does not do a lot of interviews. He does not do a lot of interviews. That's just like out of the gate, man. Does not. We got a lot of great stuff coming up the next few weeks. Make sure you like, make sure you subscribe, make sure you interact with us. You can find us on social media. We are on Instagram. We are on TikTok. We are on Facebook and all those other great places. You can listen to us wherever you stream your podcast. And of course, you can watch us on YouTube. Thank you to our friends at Heartbeat Hot Sauce, the heartbeat of the Rockman Power Hour. Use our promo code Rockman20 and get 20% off your entire order. This is what the bottle is going to look like when you get it. And this is what it's going to look like after you use it, because you're going to be loving it. And I've got a bunch that are in the recycling bin, because that's the sad fate of Heartbeat Hot Sauce. It usually ends up empty and you're ordering more. So Rockman 20 will help lessen the pain with that. Thanks again. Thanks again to our friends at Studio House Designs. Thank you to our friends over at Audio Technica, Mike Marino and Audio Technica Canada. And thank you to my co-host, Ryan Stick. Thanks to our producer, Julia Kajerski. And thanks to all of you for joining us on this journey. It wouldn't be the same without you. Until next time, we'll see you on the Rockman Power Hour.